Passing of the following bills. Senate File 9, 16, 29, 80, 84, 99, 113, 115, 146, and 162.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? Chief Clerk will call the roll. I guess we better read the bills first.
Senate File number 9 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to real property being enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File 16 from the Management Audit, an act relating to aeronautics programs be enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File number 29 from Senator Christensen, an act relating to motor vehicles be enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File number 80 from Senator Netting, an act relating to duties of the state auditor be it enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File number 84 from Senator Scott, an act relating to insurance be enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File number 99 from Senator Christensen, an act relating to water and sewer districts, be it enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File number 113 from Senator Johnson, an act relating to insurance, be enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File 115 from Senator Netting, an act relating to child and adult protective services, be enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File number 146 from Senator Escobar, an act relating to children, be enacted by the state of Wyoming. Senate File 162, introduced by Senator Kraft, an act relating to the taking of wildlife, be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
Try this again. I was in a hurry. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins,
aye.
Flickery,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Byrd,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Coleman,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Davison, excused, Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey, Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Piperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace, Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
Harvey,
excused.
Harvey excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 aye, 2 excused. As to Senate File 9, are there any changes? Gingery, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 1 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 16, are there any changes? Halverson, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Laux, aye to no. Are there further changes? Hutchings, aye to no. Croker, aye to no. McKim, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 52 aye, 6 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 29, are there any changes? Teeters, aye to no. Simlick, aye to no. Reeder, aye to no. Winters, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Burkhart, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 52 aye, 6 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 80, are there any changes? Hunt, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Harvey, aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 58 aye, 1 no, 1 excused. As to Senate File 84, are there any changes? Croker, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Halverson, aye to no. Laux, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Baker, aye to no. Watt, aye to no. Hutchings, aye to no. Harvey?
Aye.
Harvey, aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 51 aye, 8 no, 1 excused. As to Senate File 99, are there any changes? Harvey?
Aye.
Harvey, aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused. As to Senate File 113, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Harvey? Harvey, aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused. As to Senate File 115, are there any changes? Harvey, aye to, excused to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused. As to Senate File 146, are there any changes? Harvey, excused to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused. As to Senate File 162, are there any changes? Harvey, excused to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of a majority of the members elected to the House, Senate Files 9, 16, 29, 80, 84, 99, 113, 115, 146, and 162 have passed the House. We're at that order of business, or Chairman, or Madam Speaker Pro Tem. Privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, that we get a big stand-up and do a birthday song for one of our special members, Representative Teeters, who's gone over the hill, one of the first hills in his life. He is 30 today. Happy birthday.
We're at that order of business of third reading and final passage regular list. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 75.
Senate File Number 75 from Senator Hicks, an act relating to state institutions, be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
Senate File 75 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird. Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Coleman,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Davison, excused, Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel, Filer, Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone, Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 2 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 75, having received the affirmative vote of a majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 75 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 83.
Senate File Number 83, introduced by Senator Peterson, an act relating to Medicaid, be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
There are a series of amendments. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I suggested yesterday, I took the long amendment and I broke it down into four different amendments so that I think it would be easier to understand, easier to explain, and easier to kill or to let live. So, I just heard rumor that there's a yellow pig hitchhiking down the road heading towards Laramie, so I wonder if that bill had anything to do with it, but he's got to be somewhere. All right, amendment number one. I'd move amendment number one, please. Amendment number one primarily is kind of a cleanup bill. It does four different things. If you recall, when the good speaker spoke on this bill during the committee as a whole, and I think the representative from Teton County, he asked why there are definitions at both page 2 and 3 and at page 10. What the first part of amendment number one takes out the definitions in page 2 and 3, moves them and combines them with page 10, and so we only have to do it once. So that's really kind of a cleanup thing. The next thing it does is it changes the definition of what material is. That's at page 3. There's now a new Roman numeral, Romanette II, and changes to material statement to mean a statement that affects the payment or receipt of money or property. We went in, looked at the other criminal statutes. This definition is more consistent with what is used as a term of art for what material is, and so that's really kind of a cleanup thing. Next thing, if you go to page 7, we changed the designation of when a person, if you've been accused of improperly or fraudulently receiving benefits, and if the Attorney General or now, as amended, the District Attorney comes to you and says, you need to produce us all your evidence and because we think that you've done it. As currently drafted, that offender had 30 days from the point of discovery, which we don't really know when that would be, because that person discovers it on his own, or perhaps he may or he may not. What we did is we changed the language so that during an investigatory investigation, if someone says, we think you've done this, if they fully comply and bring all of their records in and show you all the records, then that allows them to, particularly for a recipient, then go through the lesser penalties. So basically it's clarifying when a person and how a person has to fully disclose to the prosecutor. And so once again, I think that's really more of a cleanup thing, and because the language was confusing. And then the final thing we did in amendment number one, you may also remember earlier there was a discussion of what is deliberate ignorance. Because that was one of the grounds for which you could be convicted of this fraudulent act. And this takes out that as one of the elements. So we just withdrew the element that if you're deliberately ignorant, you're guilty of a crime, because I just don't think that we really know what that is. And some folks over on the other side of the House may be deliberately ignorant about our bills, but I think that's a different subject for a different day. So I would move the amendment if there aren't any questions.
Anyone for the first time, second time prior to the sponsor? Hearing the question, sensing you're ready to vote, all in favor of third reading amendment number one to Senate file 83, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number one to Senate file 83 has been adopted. We are now on third reading amendment number two to Senate file 83. Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Speaker, I would move amendment number two and set forth the explanation. This is probably the amendment that might have the most issues with it, because what this does, it changes the penalties somewhat, and it allows discretion with the court to decide whether or not he should award up to three times travel damages and attorney's fees and a maximum fine. So what this amendment does is says it merely changes the language. It says that the court may award up to treble damages and may award attorney's fees and may award a fine. So it takes shall to may. It gives the discretion to the court. So if you have an egregious conduct by someone, the court says, I'm going to award treble damages. But, for example, if it's a small operator and let's say they had $50,000 worth of improper billing and they've got $150,000 now in treble damages plus fees plus everything else, the chances are they're going to go out of business. So the attorney who is representing the transgressor can say, Judge, we'll pay you everything we can, but if we pay you everything that you're asking for, we're going out of business. And so it just gives the discretion to the judge to award up to treble damages and all attorney's fees and the mandatory fines. So that's really all that Amendment Number 2 does. And so I would just submit to the floor that I think that this is, the purpose of this act is for the state to be the collector of penalties. And the question is, should you automatically get treble damages every time you do something wrong, or should the court have the discretion? So I'll leave it to your discretion to vote this Amendment 2 up or down.
Chairman Arvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I remain silent on the last one, but this one, I think if we pass this amendment, what we effectively do is take all the teeth out of this bill. If there are no deterrents, if it's up to the discretion of the court, okay, what is the habit of the court? Is justice meted out equally? I can't answer that for sure, but I can tell you this, that without those treble damages, and most of the states that have passed this type of legislation have the treble damages. This is the teeth, and I would ask you to please not leave this bill a gummer.
Anyone else for your first time? First time. Second time. Second time prior to the sponsor. Representative Nicholas.
I think there's still a lot of teeth in this, but they're just not quite as sharp as they were before.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 83. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 83 has been adopted. We're now on third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 83. Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I would move amendment number 3, and this is actually a really simple amendment. As you recall, there is a there's a whistleblower statute that was...
Did somebody call division on third reading amendment number 2 that I didn't hear? Okay. All right. We're back on third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 83. I apologize, Representative Nicholas. All in favor, please stand. Those opposed? Third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 83 has been defeated. When I give you that pause and twist to the head thing, call division right then. Okay, we're on third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 83. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And if one of these had to die, that was probably the one. The next is the amendment number 3 is a modification to the language regarding the whistleblower statute, language in the statute. There are two... And actually more, but there are two other whistleblowing statutes that are set out by statute, Wyoming Statute 9-11-103, which is a whistleblower statute, and then particularly for health care, we've got a whistleblower statute, which is at 35-2-910, that basically do the same thing, that is protecting an employee who complains about false information or about an employer who is falsifying documents or committing any type of Medicaid fraud. So this is basically, once again, as if you recall, the speaker talked about the other day, a whistleblower on top of a whistleblower. And it's quite confusing, and it can set up kind of contrabanding balances on who and what does what. And so I think that the best way to handle that, after I went back and read the statutes and combined them together, is just get rid of the whistleblower statute, because one already applies in this instance. And I'd stand for questions.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against this amendment, as pointed out last time, 342910 has absolutely no teeth in it. It's a whistleblower statute that has no remedy in it. So in the past, when hospital whistleblowers have attempted to use it, they have been told that there's no place for them to go. There's no point to the Governmental Claims Act, which there would need to be in order for that statute to be meaningful. And so I would ask you to vote no on this amendment. We need a bill that has in it a remedy for whistleblowers, and this is it.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I could, I'd like to divide the amendment. Division 1 would be lines 5 through 14. Division 2 would be the remainder of the amendment.
Division 1 is lines 5 through 14. Division 2 is the remainder of the amendment.
Correct.
The amendment is divisible.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I can speak to Division 1 first, which is lines 5 through 14.
Sure, Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Speaker, the reason for the division is I think this is Division 1 is a good amendment and a needed amendment. It provides good clarification, and I too have some concerns about the remaining amendment. I don't want this to get drugged down. So I'd urge your aye vote on Division 1.
Any further discussion on Division 1? We're voting on Division 1 to third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 83. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Division 1 to third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 83 has passed. We're now on Division 2. Mr. Majority Whip, did you want to talk about Division 2?
Mr. Speaker, no, but I know there's been some other comments directed towards that division. So.
Okay. All right. Anyone else for your first time on Division 2? Representative Nicholas.
For those that don't fully know what we just did, there's also a revision in this that changes the jurisdiction so that, if you recall, there was an issue of whether or not if the employer was out of state where you did it. Now, the other thing I failed to mention is this says that if you're an out-of-state entity, then the case can be brought in Laramie County. So now that's clarified. If you would look at page 7 and look, it goes down from lines 1 through 17. What this says is that if you're a whistleblower, you're entitled to recover all economic damages suffered to the employee, contractor, or discharge, whether it's demotion, suspension, threatening, or harassed. So that's what this whistleblower language does. It says that if you turn someone in and you're fired or discharged, then you're entitled to those economic damages. Now, under civil law, if you're terminated if you bring a lawsuit, if you came to my office and were wrongfully discharged, those are the exact damages you would get if any lawyer was representing you. So I'm just saying this language is not needed. Plus, it's got a bunch of terminology and language in there that seems to me to be in contrast to what the whistleblower statutes are, and also added extra penalties and extra protections that just simply aren't warranted. So I would ask you to deny or vote against the second half of the amendment.
Representative Nicholas, let me back you up, and just as a point of order, we just passed Division 1, which is lines 5 through 14. Division 2, which is what we're on, is lines 1 through 4 and 15 through 19.
Then I would move that you approve the second half of the amendment.
We're voting on Division 2 to Third Reading Amendment Number 3 to Senate File 83. All in favor say aye. All opposed?
No.
Division 2 has failed. We're now on Third Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 83. Representative Nicholas.
I'll see if I can screw this one up. What this does, if you have the bill in front of you, it modifies the penalties. So if you go to page 11, if you recall, these penalties have to do with record keeping on what happens if you're not keeping the appropriate records. So that helps you understand what and how these penalties work. With this modification, if you go down to lines 13 on page 11, it says a misdemeanor punishable by imprisonment for not more than 30 days instead of 6 months, and a fine of not more than $750, or both. And then there's a subsection A that says the medical assistance claims for which records were not maintained is less than 25% of the Medicaid claims submitted by the person of any consecutive 3 months or period. So that language stays the same. But it says for the lesser amount, it changes the penalty from 30 days from 6 months. Then it adds B, and B says if the value of the claim for which the records were not maintained is at least $5,000, and then once again you have the 25% provision, then the penalty is 6 months and a fine of up to $1,000. So it basically creates a two-tier system for the misdemeanors. And then finally, on the back page, it changes the felony down to 5 years and the fine down to $5,000. So that's Amendment 4, and I would move the amendment and ask for your support.
Anyone for the first time? Chairman Harvey.
I just feel like if we're talking about the people who are doing small claims, small services, that I think that the changes are appropriate. But I think when we're talking about $25,000, $100,000, I think that we need to keep the teeth in this bill. And if I knew how to divide this, I would divide it, because that very last part is the part that I object to the most. As far as the 6 months to 30 days, I'm good there. The value of the claims, I'm good there. But it's the very last part. And why would you keep records if you're frauding the federal government and the state of Wyoming? Why would you keep appropriate records? Why not just not keep records and then just say, you know, at least $10,000? Well, that gives you license to claim a whole bunch more. And so it's that last part, and if somebody knows how to divide this, I'd love to divide that last part out.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would also just like to say that one of the reasons that we went away from dollar amounts in this part of the bill as far as the claims is to even out disparities between providers who provide very expensive services like a surgeon and providers who provide smaller services, say a pharmacist for which there might be co-pays or something. So, you know, if you have a person who is billing for things that throat swabs, maybe $5 each, the person could be defrauding for a long period of time, small amounts, whereas a surgeon might have one claim and exceed the amount. So we felt that keeping it at a percentage of claims was fairer given the wide variety of services and costs of services that are provided under this. So that was the reason for this is the part in the amendment on lines 13 and 14 and 15, for example, where we didn't put a dollar amount in for the claims.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to point out, I appreciated the good bringer of the amendment. In particular, if you look on line 35 of the amendment, he switches the 10 years to a 5-year for the felony. And just to put that in context, if I beat you so bad that you have a permanent injury for the rest of your life, that's a 10-year felony. Now, put that in context to, I didn't keep my records. Now, I think you should be punished for not keeping your records, but probably that's more appropriate to be a 5-year felony as opposed to a 10-year felony.
Anyone else for their first time? First time. Second time. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request to divide the amendment. And Division 1 would be lines 1 through 34. And Division 2 would be the rest of the amendment. I'm fine with Division 1, but it's Division 2.
But before you speak on the division, let me see if we can divide it.
Give me
a second here. Chair rules that the amendment is divisible. Division 1 is lines 1 through 34 of the amendment on page 1. Division 2 is the balance of the amendment. That's lines 35 through the end of the amendment on page 2. We're on Division 1. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no problem with Division 1 and would call for the question unless there are any further discussion on Division 1.
We're voting on Division 1 to Third Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 83. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third Reading Amendment, Division 1 to Third Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 83 has passed the House. We are now on Division 2 to Third Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 83. Chairman Harvey.
Mr. Speaker, my objection remains the same. It's just that if we don't have strong enough penalties in here that we can deter people from fraudulently filing claims, and if it isn't stiff enough that it will deter them, I believe that they will just continue to do what they're doing now and that it will just continue to go on. There's not enough teeth in here. We've pulled about half of them now. I think that we need to be able to keep this last section so that we can deter people from filing false claims. If they're the small players, they're going to get their hands slapped. But if they're the big players that are costing us tons of money, I think that they need to be deterred, and I think that they need to be punished, and I think we need to have an opportunity to recover our money.
Anyone else for your first time on Division 2? Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just the same argument I just made. Division 2 is dealing with the going from 10 years down to 5 years on a felony. Spending 5 years in prison, sitting in Rollins for 5 years, That's a pretty big punishment. What is more important is that we need to start, and this is the hard part, is we talked about this on misdemeanors on a different bill, but having consistency, it's hard to explain to a victim that's been beaten substantially to the point of permanent damage, and you explain to them that we treat people that don't keep their records the same way. There needs to be some consistency in how we punish people. This is more appropriate for a 5-year felony. That'll deter people. Sitting in 5 years in Rawlins as opposed to 10 years still deters people.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to further divide the division, if possible. And I would ask, page 1, lines 35, to the bottom of that page, to page 2, lines 1 through 3, would be to my division 2A, or I'm not sure the proper number code would be. And then page 2, lines 4 through 8, would be 2B or not?
No, we won't number them that way, but we will divide them. All right, lines 35, page 1, line 35, through page 2, line 3 is division 2. The remainder of page 2 is now division 3. It would be the last day of general file that we decided to do parliamentary games on amendments. Chair rules that amendment is divisible. We are now on the new Division 2. Okay, for your first time on the brand new Division 2.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd just like to echo the thoughts of the good Chairman of Judiciary, and I support Division 2.
Anyone else for their first time on the new Division 2 as opposed to the old Division 2? First, Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Speaker, I would just point out that even though it's a 5-year penalty, it's a 5 years for every 3 months where the records are not kept. So if you're committing the crime for a year, that could be 4 stacked felonies. So you could be doing 20 years in jail. So I think there's still a lot of teeth in it as drafted.
Anyone else for your first time on Division 2? Second time prior to the sponsor. We are now voting on the new Division 2, which is lines 35 on the second page through line 3 on the third page. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment, or division, the new Division 2 to third reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 83 has passed the House. We are now on Division 3 to Senate, third reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 83. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And on Division 3, I would be against the division. I want to keep the repeat offense in the bill, so that's why I divided it. And I would ask to defeat the division.
Anyone else for their first time? First time. Second time. Second time prior to the sponsor, Representative Nicholas.
I'm just curious how many folks know what they're voting on the language on Division 3. Raise your hand. I'm not opposed to the motion. I don't have any feelings either way, Mr. Speaker.
We are voting on Division 3 to third reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 83. All in favor say aye. All opposed?
No.
Third reading, Division 3 to third reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 83 has failed the House. Senate File 83, having been read 3 separate times, the question, more than that even, maybe. The question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Flake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison excused. Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson. Harshman. Harshman? Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings. Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff. Pieperinen.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Laux. Aye to no. Reeder. Aye to no. Larson. Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 47 aye, 12 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 83, having received the affirmative vote of a majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 83 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 86.
Senate File number 86, as introduced by Senator J.D. Anderson, an act relating to counties, be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
Senate File 86, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Farlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison excused. Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel. Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
no.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
no.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
Moniz, aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petroff, Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 53 aye, 6 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 86, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 86 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 90.
Senate File 90 from Senator Bebout, an act relating to state lands, be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
Here is an amendment. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 90 and ask for your aye vote. Folks, I heard your voice loud and clear that you're not interested in taking these monies from the sale of these proceeds and putting them into permanent savings. And so what I attempted to do was try and assuage my concerns dealing with the earmark. So you'll find on page 2, for example, specifically with that department, what we do and with all of the subsequent departments in their own sections is we delete the language that talks about specifically how that money is to be appropriated. Ultimately, it's up to our Appropriations Committee to determine how they're going to appropriate money, and I don't think it's good practice to put in statute how that money should be spent. The other thing this amendment does is it does continue the concept of the Special Reserve Fund, but what it does is it takes and puts all of the monies from all three of the institutions into a single revenue fund that we're going to create. It's going to be called the Institutional Land Revenue Fund. At that point, it will be the responsibility of the institutions to come back to your Appropriations Committee and ask for appropriations out of that fund. So I would stand for any questions.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Speaker, I like the concept. I think it's a good concept that is a balance of the fear that the departments will go out and liquidate land in order to use it for capital construction. It may be a question to the good chair of education. As I penciled this in, I'm not clear that I'm uncomfortable that we have a clear flow of these funds to that account. And just to have the body look at this, like on page 2, we look at line 13, how this would end up reading is transactions involving such land shall be credited as otherwise directed by state or federal law or the conveyance instrument. And I just want to make sure that we have the language directing these funds to this account or what other assurances might be there. Again, I like the idea. So maybe just address that for me. I'd appreciate it.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, my first reaction was I liked what was going on here, but then I got to thinking about it, and we're kind of taking away the incentive for the institution to actually do this. If they're not going to get a benefit from it, we have the same issue we have now. They really just disregard the issue, and nothing happens. And that's the purpose of this bill, is if there's lands that have maybe a better and higher use that the institution isn't doing anything with, why not let them have a little bit of the benefit if they do something with the local community with that particular block of land? So on and against the amendment.
Anyone else for your first time? Representative Zwanitz or Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually really like the amendment and might actually vote for the bill now with it. This bill has concerned me all the way through the process. I've served on your State Building Commission now for 6 years, and we've continually had these discussions because these aren't trust lands, and how, when people bequeath these lands, how we deal with them. I think this is actually an appropriate mechanism that really is a good compromise. I don't necessarily think the other body is going to go for it, so I know we'll have a good conference committee on it. But I think this is a logical step. It gives us a little bit more control over the funding while still providing some incentive, knowing those agencies who have these lands can come back and apply for this fund should they want to use it for something else. So it doesn't completely absorb the money from them, but it doesn't let them have complete control over it either. And I think it's a really good step that gives the discretion to this body, or at least to our Appropriations Committee, moving forward. So I'd encourage your support of the amendment.
Representative Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question, I'm for the idea of the identification, but it's interesting to me that I think a journal entry identifying the amount of the funds would accomplish as much as having a separate account. If we had a journal entry, well, then the funds get commingled with the others, and the investment and handling at the State Treasurer's Office could be identified and still reap some benefit from the use of the funds within the commingled investments.
Anybody else for their first time? First time. Second time. Second time prior to the sponsor. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section 2 is what the language in 922005 will refer back to, and you can see that on line 28 of the amendment on page 1. And so the Institutional Land Revenue Fund is created to consist of revenue from the sales of the institutional lands under these three subsections. And so structurally, it's my belief that it works. Staff believes that it works the way that I described. And so I hope those concerns are dealt with. I think the institutions would feel less secure about the possibility of putting this in the general fund and then relying on an entry inside to prove how much had flowed in there. If it's in a separate coffee can, everybody can see that it's clearly identified for that reason, and then it would be ultimately the responsibility of this body to appropriate that money. So I've enjoyed the conversation, and I would ask you to vote aye on the amendment.
Voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 90. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All in favor, please stand. Oh, come on. The chair has given up on his ability to judge. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 90 has passed the House. Senate File 90 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison excused. Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel. Feiler, Freeman, Gay, Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Greer, Green, Halverson, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Hutchings, Yagi, Kasparic, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson, Lockhart, Laux, Madden, McKim, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Petroff, Piperinen, Reeder, Simlick, Summers, Stubson, Teeters, Throne, Wallace, Walters, Watt, Wilson, Winters, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Flickery, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 2 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 90, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 90 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 147. There is an amendment, Representative Halverson. Oh, wait, wait.
Senate File 147, introduced by Senator Kraft, an act relating to public health and hospitals, be it enacted by the state of Wyoming.
Sorry to interrupt you, Representative Halverson. I'm sensitive.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 147 and will withdraw it at the appropriate time. I urge you to vote against this bill. I speak as an 8-year hospital board member with 2 years as chairman. I think this is an unfair pay-to-play measure. Small rural hospitals are often in no position to pay for these designations by the American Heart Association or the American Stroke Association. And make no mistake, they do require paying thousands of dollars for a small country hospital that might be struggling year to year to keep its doors open. An accreditation by any of the organizations listed in this bill is costly. And further, it is not a one-time expense. It can be a biannual expense, leaving the purchase of these designations to the largest Wyoming hospitals and leaving out the smaller ones. One of Wyoming's hospitals, the one in the Valley of the Stars, was named the 35th best rural hospital in the country without any of these costly accreditations or purchased designations. Our rural hospitals perform well when a heart attack or a stroke comes into the emergency room. A critical access hospital has already demonstrated the quality of its care in these areas. As a matter of fact, the outcomes are reported. Just Google hospital compare and look at our hospitals in Wyoming and see where they rate on heart attack, stroke, pneumonia, congestive heart failure, and others. These outcomes as good as they are, there should be credit, not a formal accreditation for these good outcomes, not the implied demerit for the failure to purchase a designation. All Wyoming hospitals, large and small, are already surveyed frequently by state and federal agencies. I think the requirement to purchase an additional designation as a stroke center or heart attack center is unfair to most of the hospitals in this state. If a small rural hospital declines to pay for the accredited stroke and STEMI designations, they will automatically be deemed a referring facility. And referring, I'm afraid, will be to the largest Wyoming hospitals and not, for example, some of the hospitals in the other states west of Wyoming, which those of us on the other side of the Continental Divide use most frequently. I worry about the unintended consequences of failure to purchase a designation from the American Heart Association or the American Stroke Association. Will someday reimbursements be cut to non-designated hospitals? And will ambulances be forced to run a suspected heart patient or stroke patient to the nearest designated hospital instead of the hospital which might be closest? I urge your no vote on Senate File 147.
Representative Kasparek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This program is a voluntary program. There, you know, a lot of the heart designation was funded by a grant, and it helped hospitals to purchase equipment so that they would be able to meet the criteria for being a referral hospital. Being a referral hospital, being a receiving hospital for heart attack, or being a comprehensive or primary care for stroke is all voluntary. It's all taking place right now. Hospitals currently choose to be accredited or not to be accredited now. This is still a choice that all hospitals have. Hospitals also have the choice to refer patients or to allow the patient to select where they want to go, whether it's a hospital within the state of Wyoming or whether it's a hospital in a bordering state. So all this bill does is allow the Department of Health to list on a website whether or not a hospital in Wyoming wishes to be known as a referral hospital or a receiving hospital or a primary or a comprehensive stroke care. I would urge you to vote against the amendment and stand for the bill.
Anyone else for the Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does anyone know what the cost of accreditation is? I'm kind of curious as to what that might amount to. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Filer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thought I talked enough today, but this bill is actually pretty simple, and it's kind of nice, especially if you need treatment for a heart attack or stroke, things like that. Like my wife had a heart condition, and we actually got to look online in different places and had some accredited hospitals elsewhere, a state way east of us, where she got her heart surgery done. But when it, you know, I just think main part of this bill, it actually allows us as the patient to actually look and see which hospitals are accredited for, you know, best for stroke and best for heart attacks and heart problems, and that way we know where to get the best care. For the bill, definitely against the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment and in favor of the bill, you know, this doesn't really change anything for most of us, except for those of us that are, and I'm not included in this category very strongly, but those people who have problems and they are involved in their problems and heart strokes or at risk for such, You know, I'd like to be able to look online and see who does the best job and how close they are. And then when it comes to crisis situation, I've already got the opportunity to make that. And one thing that I would like to make clear is that you only have to pay a registration fee if you want to be a receiving hospital. Every hospital can send people to receiving hospitals, but wouldn't it be nice to know what are the best receiving hospitals, how close they are, and a few details about them? Please vote against the amendment and in favor of the bill.
Anyone else for the first time? First time. Second time. Second time. Second time prior to the sponsor. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In answer to the question about the cost of accreditations, I was told that the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, does charge several thousand dollars biannually to maintain the designation. It's not an accreditation, it's a designation as a heart-receiving hospital or stroke-receiving hospital. The organization referred to in the bill as the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, otherwise known as JACO, a small rural hospital can expect to pay as much as, sometimes less, $40,000 for a JACO accreditation. And I think that paying for a nationally recognized seal of approval is not the Wyoming way. I urge your vote on the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Halverson, did you want to withdraw your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to withdraw the amendment at this time.
The amendment's been withdrawn. Senate File 147 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker. Barlow,
aye.
Berger,
aye.
Flake,
aye.
Blevins,
aye.
Flickery,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Bird,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Coleman,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Davison excused, Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
no.
Green,
aye.
Halverson, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Hutchings, Yagi, Kasparik, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson, Lockhart, Laux, Madden, McKim, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Petroff, Piperinen, Reeder, Semlick, Summers, Stubson, Teeters, Throne, Wallace, Walters, Watt, Wilson, Winters, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Semlick, aye to no. Blevins, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Croker, aye to no. Are there further changes? The vote is closed. 36 aye, 23 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 147, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 147 has passed the House. Brothers and sisters of the 62nd, that sound you hear in the distance is bills screaming as they die going over the cliff. We're at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, general file list has been rearranged. General file will be as follows. Senate file 118, 149, 66, 137, 136, 160, 47, 56, 153, and 20. And Mr. Speaker, we might be mindful today that there be ample opportunity to discuss some of these bills on second and third reading. We don't have to discuss everything from one end of the earth to the other on each of these bills today. There will be another opportunity. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor of resolving into Committee of the Whole, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. I feel like Columbus finally getting to America. Representative Connolly.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. You've heard the good majority floor leader, and again, we are one general file from the weekend. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 118. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 118 is introduced by Senator Driscoll, an act relating to eminent domain, specifying burden of proof in eminent domain proceedings, adding provision for litigation expenses, clarifying determination of fair market value, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 118 engrossed, eminent domain-2, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye. Representatives Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters. To no votes, Representatives Blake and Danswanicher, signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
Thank you. You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 118 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I will explain the Standing Committee Amendment. There's three changes that come out of the Standing Committee Amendment. The first one you'll find on page 2, beginning with line 11. There's some stricken language there, 126.504A, Romanet 2 and Romanet 3. And the added language would be any requirements of 126.504A. Now, I was not responsible for distributing on the floor a handout that spells out and lists all of the parts of the Eminent Domain Act. But if you have that handy, you might grab that and look, because I will make reference to that with the first part of this amendment. In 126.504, these are the requirements to exercise eminent domain. Currently, in our law, in order to reimburse the condemnee for all reasonable litigation expenses, there are certain things there that you have to do, what the condemner is required to do. What we have done in the Standing Committee Amendment is to bring in that whole portion of 126.504A. And if you have that in front of you now, you can see we've added, basically the Standing Committee Amendment has added the provision number 1 in there, which is the public interest and necessity required the project or for the use of eminent domain is authorized by the Wyoming Constitution. So that is brought in the first part of the amendment. The second part of the amendment you'll find in subsection J. We have removed the word not in line 15, and we have changed the 10% in line 16, as you can see in the amendment now, that becomes 115%. So, that section now would read, and I'll read it mostly in its entirety so you can understand what this amendment, this proposed amendment does. If a court or jury finds that the fair market value of the property sought by the condemnor is more than 115% greater than the final offer required by subsection E of this section, the condemner shall reimburse the condemnee for all reasonable litigation expenses. So what that means then is if a court or jury finds, again, that the value of the property is 115% greater than the final offer that was offered by the condemner, then the condemner will reimburse the condemnee for all reasonable litigation expenses. Okay, Madam Chair, the next part of the amendment is on page 3 in subsection B on line 8, and it removes some of the new language that's put in there, the surface use agreements and surface damage agreements. So this section contemplates how fair market value is defined, and in this section it says determination of fair market value shall be used generally accepted appraisal techniques and may include the price paid for other comparable easements. And then it goes on with the existing language. So we have removed surface use agreements and surface damage agreements. The testimony in the committee was suggested that in most cases these agreements would have to be subpoenaed. They are a matter of confidentiality of the two parties that have developed these agreements between them, and we just wasn't sure that, based on the testimony, that these would really contribute that much to the determination of fair market value. So, Madam Chair, that is the amendment, and we'll try to answer any questions. If not, I'd call for the question.
Okay. We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. I'm Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Nope. Okay, question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor? All those opposed? Okay, the Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, this bill has to do with eminent domain. And Article 1, Section 32 and 33 of the Constitution provide and allow for eminent domain. They do say that just compensation must be paid, and eminent domain is a prickly subject and not one that's very popular probably anywhere, certainly not with me, as far as private property rights are concerned. However, let's just say this right up front. Without eminent domain, we'd be sitting here in the dark. And I understand that. I understand that eminent domain must occur, and for the common good, it has to be exercised. This does not change that fundamental concept. This bill merely refines a few things in the eminent domain bill. And actually, Madam Chairman, I would argue that for anybody who's acting in good faith in eminent domain, the changes that are done in this bill won't make one iota of difference to how they do their business. So there's four changes. I'm going to take some of my own medicine here and race through this thing. There's four changes. The first change is at the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2. There are three things that have to be proved in order to proceed with eminent domain. And this simply says that if one of those is not proven, the case has to be dismissed. That has great importance to some landowner who's been locked up in negotiations for quite a long time while an eminent domain action is pending. And some courts have tried to amend the complaint and just let them take out the unnecessary part where this clearly says that it should be dismissed. And all this does is shore up the fact that it has to be dismissed. During the time that their property is tied up in this proceeding and after the complaint's been filed, the value of the property continues to increase. At least it always has. It probably always will in the future. If it's tied up 2 or 3 years and then the court finally says, well, you know, you're not entitled to eminent domain because you didn't meet one of these three elements, there's been temptation to just amend it, which leaves the condemnee, the landowner, locked in at the value back when the thing was filed. And so this would say it has to be dismissed and refiled, which ratchets up the value to a current value, and it would also allow a Supreme Court review at that point, if it's appropriate, over whether the condemnor is properly exercising eminent domain or not. The second change is found on page 2. And that says that if an eminent domain proceeding is dismissed because they failed to meet one of those elements, then the condemnor pays the cost of litigation, which only seems fair. Now you have a landowner who's pulled into it, has to lay out his money to defend himself, and then and all this says is if the condemnation shouldn't have been filed in the first place, the condemnor can pay the litigation expenses, not the landowner. The third change is also on page 2, and that is the part that was amended that was just explained as part of the Standing Committee amendment. So now, the way it's worded now, it says that if there's a finding the fair market value is more than 115% of the final offer, then the condemnor is going to be on the hook for the litigation expenses for a landowner who has to hire an attorney and do all the work because they lowballed an offer to him. And so from the time that they make their final lowball offer and they litigate forward, if there's a final determination that's more than 115% of the original lowball offer that was made, then again the condemnor can pay the litigation expenses from the point where the final lowball offer was made forward. And again, if the failure to do that means the landowner may, what incentive does the landowner have to contest the value if they're going to burn up all the extra value that's awarded to them in attorney's fees just to get it? The fourth change is on page 3, and in the language that's left, it starts at line 13 on page 3 and goes through the end. This change, it formerly said that you can only use values for transactions by other companies, and this is a change to say public or private entities. There's really no distinction between them. It's all done on the basis of appraisals. There's no reason to leave public entities out of it. If there are other comparable condemnations, those values should have all been done, whether they're by public or private entities, on certified appraisals. And there's six to one, half dozen to the other. So those are the four changes. That is the bill, and I'll stand for questions, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Majority Whip.
I don't know if we want to proceed with the committee of the whole amendment. Is that all right with the sponsor?
Let me guess on the answer, but please proceed.
Madam Chair, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 118 and ask for your favorable consideration. And being mindful of the good majority floor leader's admonition, I'll try to focus this in. I do have some significant concerns about this bill because it is a shift in the balance that was reached in the eminent domain law. And, you know, back in 2007, there was a long and grueling battle to get to an eminent domain statute that recognized the necessity of having eminent domain as well as the needed protections for landowners around the state to ensure that those with the power of eminent domain didn't just come in and abuse that power, that instead there really was a good faith, significant negotiation for exercise of the power. And what this does is it comes in and changes that balance. And we've seen this through the years. You know, each side comes in and kind of tries to put their finger on the scale to move the balance. And that's certainly what this bill is. And the problem, though, and one of the concerns is the bill is really aimed at one situation. And it sort of came out of a case that was in my county that involved the State Highway Department and the creation of a highway outside of my town. And it is... The landowners lost that case, and as a result, we see this bill here, and it's aimed at that particular situation. And the problem is it ignores a myriad of other situations, and it adversely impacts those situations in ways that I don't think the sponsors ever even contemplated. And the amendment focuses particularly on two parts. That's the Section D on pages 1 and 2 and the Section J on page 2.
And like I said, this is aimed at really a situation of really a road and the formation of roads and the use of eminent domain for roads. But the problem is that doesn't translate necessarily to other uses of eminent domain. And let me just run you through these two provisions and an example just to show you. And for example, we can look at paragraph D. And what paragraph D does is essentially says, and this part of the law isn't in the statute, but it says there's a requirement that you have to show that the property you're seeking to condemn is necessary to the project. And where that can come into play is on a road, for example, in the case in my county, they wanted, in, say, 500 feet for a road, and because they were condemning, really, for future expansion of that road. And what the court said is, no, you only need 300 feet of that. But the case didn't get kicked out, thrown out all the way. It kept going on. It was reformed, and the court said, yeah, you are entitled to that 300 feet, even though you're not entitled to 500, and they went on. What this bill says is that, boom, they're kicked out. They are out of the court. They have to come back and refile. And as the good majority floor leader told you, these cases can take years. And so,
Mr. Majority Whip, you need to stay on your Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Madam Chairman, I am on the Committee of the Whole Amendment, and I'm speaking specifically to Item D, which is part of the Committee of the Whole Amendment. And so what you have is a circumstance where you have to refile, and you can, and then because you misjudged, you're waiting a couple years then for your condemnation. And where this doesn't work and is outside sort of the roadway examples, say you have a pipeline. And on that pipeline, you want to condemn an extra 100 feet for a valve box. And you go into court and you fight around, and all of a sudden you come out on the other side and they say, no, you can have a valve box further down, you don't need it. So because you don't need that 100 feet, all of a sudden you're kicked out of court and you're 2 years away from condemning again. And that's where you come into these sort of inadvertent results. And then if you look at Section J, which is the other part of the amendment and the other part of the impact, what this does is it talks about, and now it's basically 15%. If you go in and the award is 15% greater than you last offered, then attorney's fees are granted. And frankly, I don't even think that makes sense in a road case. But I can tell you that in, for example, a pipeline case, 15% is nothing. In fact, you can have a couple of appraisals that come in, and they can be 400-500% difference. And, for example, let's talk about a smaller tract of land. Maybe it only involves a couple thousand feet that the pipeline is going across. If you have different appraisers looking at it, you know, one may say $2,000, the other may say $6,000. It doesn't mean you didn't negotiate in good faith. It doesn't mean you made a lowball offer, but And that's why this bill is drafted, and as broadly as it's drafted, really doesn't make sense in a lot of condemnation proceedings. And so what the amendment does is it focuses in on what I've heard is really the problem, and actually what I've seen in my own experience is the problem, which is with our public entities, frankly. And you look, I've had myself experiences where the State Highway Department has sort of run roughshod, ignored their obligations under the eminent domain statute. And that's, as we've talked over this bill, as we've heard testimony, time after time after time after time, that's what you hear. That's where the problems arise. And that's, I think, what the bill is trying to get at. And so what the amendment does is it simply tries to get at the real root of the problem. And in Section D, it leaves in place the obligation of all condemnors to establish by a preponderance of the evidence those three elements above. But what it says is that the failure of a public condemnor to prove any of those requirements results in dismissal. And so it does, if you have, for example, YDOT come in and overreach and try to get too much land, they would be kicked out and have to start over. But it focuses it on the problem. And then under Section J, what it does is, again, that 15% now greater award and the resulting litigation expenses and the award of those expenses would now be applicable only to public entities. And again, focusing on the problem. Now, backing up, and one final point before I stand back for questions on the amendment. You know, any person coming in and seeking eminent domain, if you look at, and I think the good representative from Washakie County handed out a copy of the statute, but 126.509 sets a whole list of requirements of folks have to jump through before they ever even file condemnation. There's a requirement that they have to negotiate in good faith or they get dismissed anyway. So, again, this focuses in on the real problem. I think it gets, it's more as surgically aimed at the complaints we heard, but it eliminates all those unintentional results. So I would ask for your aye vote on the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I would ask you to vote no on this. If you believe that that pipeline companies and transmission line companies appear as the driven snow and the only bad actor in here is public entities, then please bring that private landowner to me that will swear to that, because I've got a bridge that I want to sell him. I would ask you to vote no on the amendment.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment. Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against the amendment, ladies and gentlemen, we want equitability. What our Constitution says, Article 1, Section 6, regards due process of law. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. People that have property to be taken for by public entities or private entities both deserve the same level of due process. So I am on and against the amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the amendment, again, this amendment fixes most of my concerns with this bill. Passing this isn't going to affect future revenue streams in the state. Not passing this, we're putting a few more fingers on the neck of the golden goose here in Wyoming that we're down here appropriating the money on. So be very careful, vote for the amendment, and then for the bill if you want to.
We're still on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Representative Summers.
Madam Chairman, on and against the amendment. As a landowner, it doesn't matter to me whether it's a private entity or a public entity taking my property. It's still the same argument. Once again, on and against the amendment and for the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the amendment. This bill is a substantial step, and we need to go back and see who's causing the problem. It's the public entities causing the problem. I mean, if we start getting stories that the other entities are causing problems, then we can include them. But let's just deal with the entities that are causing the problem right now, in particular YDOT. And so let's narrowly constrain this bill to who we're trying to get at and not bring everybody into it. So on and for the amendment, but if we don't get the amendment, I think the bill needs to go down.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and in favor of the amendment and most likely against the bill. Eminent domain is a very serious issue, as was introduced by our good majority leader, and it's been an issue that we've looked at over the years. And we have before us a bill that was drafted by individuals, not an interim committee or a study, and now we're trying to do some work with that. The amendment really focuses on what has been the historic problem most of the time. I worked in this industry for the energy industry for 40 years. Having eminent domain made a difference on getting stuff done or not. Most of those were power lines to provide electric service to people, but not all. And we usually could work things out. We had a pride that we didn't have to go to court on any of the issues. The leverage we had with eminent domain made a difference, but we tried to do it right. We're going to be working with those people for the rest of their lives and the rest of their corporate existence. So with caution, I urge you to vote for the amendment and most likely against the bill.
Anyone else on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We've heard a couple of things. This is caused by a single entity and it happens to be a public entity. I can assure you that in my neck of the woods, and I actually go out in the woods and I live in the woods, there is numerous private entities I don't have the liberty to address them as some of you did the public entity by name, that there are condemnations occurring and they are not fulfilling the due process, and the thing continues, and guess what happens? It puts landowners at a significant disadvantage in the long term because they're paying these litigation expenses. So the public versus private thing, folks, that is red herring. Defeat this amendment.
Madam Minority Floor Leader. I would just urge you to support the amendment. What happens if this amendment doesn't pass is that projects where there might be a small problem, a small dispute that could be resolved, will get dismissed and you'll go back and start over. And there's really no reason to do that. It's sort of a heavy-handed approach without the amendment. So I urge you to support the amendment. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was on the committee that listened to this bill, and what it did cause me to do, because there seemed to be quite an uproar over it, I got into the statutes and started reading and studying, and I came out believing there isn't a good balance between private property rights and condemners. And after coming to that realization, and we're trying to add something in with this amendment that will reduce the effectiveness of the bill. If we have people acting in good faith going through eminent domain, this bill will not make any difference. It'll only affect incidences when it's being abused, and it could be done. And I'm on and against the amendment, but for the bill.
Okay, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the amendment, and maybe against the bill. Let's be honest in our discussions here. Depending on how you calculate it, between 60% and 80% of our tax revenue comes from extractive industries in this state. And we all sit here and complain about how difficult it is when the federal government imposes regulations on our extractive industries and makes it impossible for them to do business, and we whine and we cry about the federal government. Don't make any mistake about what we're doing here right now. We're just adding another layer of regulations and another layer of difficulty on our extractive industries to do business. Now, we've specifically granted some specific rights, and they're found in Wyoming Statute 126.815, to some private industries to be able to do some things so that we can have commerce in the state. Now, all for the protection of private property rights, but this bill tends to skew things out of balance. This amendment brings them in. What the statute says is any person, association, company, corporation authorized to do business in this state may appropriate by condemnation a way of necessity across or on so much of the lands or real property of others as is necessary for the location, construction, maintenance, and use of reservoirs, drains, flumes, ditches, including return flow and wastewater ditches, underground water pipelines, pumping stations, and other necessary appurtenances, canals, electric power transmission lines and distribution systems, railroad trackage sidings, spurs, tracks, tramways, roads or mine truck haul roads required in the course of their business for agricultural, mining, exploration and drilling of production in oil, gas, milling, electric power transmission, distribution, domestic, municipal or sanitary purposes, or for the transportation of coal from any mine or railroad, or for the transportation of oil and gas from any well. What we're talking about here is shifting the balance for the lifeblood of this state. We've done a great job, and if you look in our statutes, there is a great balancing between the rights of the landowners and the rights of the industry. We worked hard. We spent a year. We had 10 committee meetings in 2007 to address that and debated this bill then. What this bill does is it just knocks the stuff off balance on the amendment and for the, and against the bill.
Representative Northrup.
Speaking on and against the amendment, after reviewing that list, it doesn't appear that there's anybody except my neighbor that cannot condemn my land. Thank you.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you for a fine Friday afternoon. This bill, in its whole concept, really is a small landowner bill. If you think about the bill and being against the amendment, first of all, why in the world would we treat private companies differently than public companies on how they go about condemning and taking our personal property, our private property? And this bill is really about the small landowner, because the one entity, the one person, it's the single-acre guy or the 5-acre guy or the 20-acre guy who can't possibly afford a lawyer to come and when a pipeline comes through or a power line comes through, or they're the ones that just can't afford a lawyer. I mean, you know, your property's worth $20,000. You go talk to a lawyer and you want to fight a major company, and then you walk into this door and that lawyer's going to say, it's going to cost you $15,000 just to walk in the door and for me to represent you and to fight over how much of your this easement is going to affect your life, and how tall that power line is going to be, and how wide it is, and how close it's going to be to your house. But they don't have the money to do it. What this bill does is to protect the small landowner that says, we're going to make sure that both public and private folks, that who's ever going to come in and take your property by eminent domain is going to pay you a fair value, or you're going to pay their attorney's fees. That's all this deal does. And in fact, if you look at the statutes, if you look at 126.405, you know, when you do a condemnation, you break it down into two parts. You got to prove the first part, then you got to prove the second part. The first part is you got to show public interest. You got to show that it's in the greatest public good with the least private injury. And number three, you've got to show that it's necessary, an absolute publicly necessary project. And if you don't prove those things, our statute, as it sits right now, says you can't condemn. And yet, and that's our language from 2007, and yet, now the way the courts have interpreted it is this, that's not enough. They can come back in and reamend and do it over and over and over again, and the only people who can play this game are lawyers. Lawyers and big companies. What this bill does is just give one more step to say, hey, if you're not a big landowner and if you don't have money, we're going to give you a fighting chance to fight back and protect your private property. That's what this bill does, on and against the amendment.
Okay. We are on committee of the whole, amendment number one. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and in favor of amendment number one. This long list that was provided by one of our members, at least by my count, there's only 10 entities on there that are in the private sector. The bulk of the condemnees who have that right are way more in the public sector than in the private sector. So when you see this long list of who all's there, it does tell you there's a number of people that can, or a number of entities that can do that, but a small number is the private sector. And so on and in favor of the amendment number one.
Vice Chair Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Also in favor of the amendment, and specifically because private entities can do things public entities can't always do. They can have some indirect benefits. Eminent domain is more of a last resort. They can do, you know, road work, depending on the land, obviously. But I do think there is a difference. We talked about the equality issue and the fairness issue. I do think there are two somewhat different processes of a public entity is coming after you to use eminent domain versus a private energy or mineral company. And so I like this bill a lot better. I might actually support the bill. I voted no in committee. But if it's just the public entities, it does change the bill, and I think that goes to the heart of the problem why this bill was brought. So I'd ask you to support the amendment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would ask the body, why, as a landowner, should I be afforded protection from the state of Wyoming and yet not be afforded the same protection from companies? It's an issue. It is an issue of fairness. It creates inequity, and I would ask you to please reject the amendment.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one final point from me. You know, this discussion about protecting landowners from from attorney's fees is a valid one, but it's one that has been addressed already in the statute. And if you look at Section 126.509, Section G, it specifically says in there all these six requirements, these detailed requirements of good faith that you have to go through before you can ever even file a lawsuit. If you don't do that, if you don't act, if a condemnor failed to negotiate in good faith as required, then the landowner gets their reasonable attorneys and litigation fees. And so it is a concern, but it's a concern that's already addressed. So please vote in favor of the amendment.
Just one more thing. I also sat in the hearing when this was presented to the at committee, and interestingly enough, the companies there who testified said this bill doesn't really affect us. That was their testimony. Interestingly enough, it doesn't affect them, and yet for the past 3 days we've had 6 or 7 lobbyists out there all day long working us, saying, oh, let's just do this to public entities. And I just say that something's a little fishy in Denmark when you testify that way and they lobby that way, and who's going to win, the big guy or the little guy?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
And, Madam Chairman, just one more thought. At least public entities do their business in public. At least there's transparency. At least there's some opportunity to have input, unlike private companies, which do their business behind closed doors. And I've always said eminent domain is a sale you can't refuse. And if you're going to get one shoved down your throat, at least you ought to have a little due process. With a public entity, you're going to have an opportunity at some point to complain to somebody, us if nobody else. With a private company, you have nowhere to go. So on and against the amendment.
All right, question. Question being called on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has failed. We're back on the bill. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed? Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has failed. We're back on the bill. Is there any more discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Sedmuck's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 118 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Senate File 118 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 149. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate Number 149 from Senator Dockstader, an act relating to game and fish, increasing the number of complementary hunting and fishing licenses as specified, providing for complementary wild bison licenses, making conforming changes, providing an appropriation, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 149 engrossed, complimentary hunting license, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchings, Pieperinen. Those excused, Representatives Yeagie and Crone, signed by Representative Davis, Chairman. Further reviewed by your number 2 committee, appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 149 engrossed, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Escobar, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, one excused, Representative Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Mr. Vice Chair Yeagie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 149 do pass, and I will explain the bill.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the one that we got halfway through or three-fourths of the way through the other day and found out that we forgot to refer it because it did have an appropriation. We went to the appropriations. And one of the big questions that was asked was why on page 2 is it a $12,500 appropriation? The answer is there are 5 buffalo licenses, bison license we're asking for, and for a non-resident, each one of those is $2,500. So that makes up the $12,500. And the Game and Fish also, the agency testified, if they sell to residents, which are 400, they will only recoup the actual amount that they lost. But that is the highest amount. Members of the 62nd, if you'll remember, this is the Wyoming Governor's Big Game License Coalition. And they already issue, the governor already has 20 licenses he can issue. We are suggesting to add 5 bison licenses onto this, and with the excess of the bison that we have, this is not a problem to the Game and Fish. And the funds was one of the things that was discussed. We were getting in the middle of it. And I will tell you that we will be looking at this in this committee this summer on interim topics. And the suggestion that this money should come from the money that it generates is one that we really need to be looking at. You have this handout, and that kind of explains it, and I did. If there are no other questions, I'll...
I have a question for you.
Mr. Chairman, then.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That reimbursement to the general fund, however, could be taken care of with an amendment with this, with these 5 bison licenses, however, right? I mean, we don't have to wait for the interim to do this increment because it's right before us right now. Ooh.
Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This appropriation keeps in line with the current governor's and license initiative. These funds are in the auditor's office, and if these licenses are used, sold, then the Game and Fish asks for reimbursement from the auditor's office. We've been doing this for years, and these governor's licenses, this simply expands the program to bison. Those funds escaped any budget cuts in our 6.5% reductions in the auditor's account, so we've kept that program intact, and this is simply an expansion of the program.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Maybe for the good chair of appropriations, I'm just curious, what does this program costs the state of Wyoming, where do these funds go? And then I guess looking at the list on the handout is what do those organizations use the money for? And then to tie in with some discussion that we've had throughout the session here, do those funds go to buy conservation easements?
Anyone else? Chairman Madden?
Yeah. My issue here is that we end up using general fund money that ultimately goes to one of these groups that gets a license and they have an auction or a raffle or whatever they do, and one way or another they make a lot of money off of it, all right? And it turns out that for these licenses here, we're part of the people that are helping generate this money, and it seems to me that if they're making a slew of money off of this, that part of the deal ought to be that they reimburse us for the $2,500 in our general fund that we have sacrificed in order to make the Game and Fish whole. I don't see that. Well, in fact, I don't even know if it's legal for us to be granting and giving funds away to private entities like this.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To answer some of those questions on this money's returned $900,000 to the state of Wyoming, which has been put into habitat improvements and projects that benefit these animals for which the license were complimentary. In fact, here just recently, a bighorn sheep license that was auctioned off by an organization which promotes hunting on another continent brought in $70,000, of which most of that comes back to the state of Wyoming. We more than recoup the amount of money on these licenses. And on the surface, yes, it looks like we're giving licenses away and we could be using them, but it benefits habitat, and I think we've had enough discussions on this floor over the benefits of having adequate habitat in the state to benefit wildlife. So that's the amount of money this brings in. this bill merely adds in there the ability to provide 5 bison license in addition to the others. This is separate from what are known as commissioner's licenses. The good chairman of appropriations has just given me some updated information that says the total funding for this revenue recruitment was $1.8 million. So that should answer the question about how much money is involved here and what comes back to the state. Thank you.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Actually, the number that I have is $3 million that has come back to the state to go for different projects. The $12,000 reimburses what the department would lose if they would have sold those licenses to hunters. Just want to remind the body that the Game and Fish, 80% of the funding from Game and Fish comes from licenses. So what happens is when you take these licenses out and you don't sell them, then what happens is you have a reduction. I think that doing $12,000 and bringing in hundreds of thousands of dollars is a good investment, and I think that we're squibbling over things that we have time to do later.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to help out a little bit, nobody has asked the history or anything of the gunpowder and buckskin hunt licenses that were originated with Governor Hathaway and Senator Pete Madsen quite a few number of years ago. It doesn't cost the state one dime. We buy and pay for the licenses. In the last couple of years, 7 licenses have gone to wounded veterans on a free hunt on private property. Really quite a tribute to the returning veterans. So from the standpoint of clubs making money, I want you to understand that in not all those years has the Gunpowder and Buckskin Club received one dime of profit from the function of the Gunpowder and Buckskin Hunts.
Vice Chair Yagi? No. Question? Do I hear question? All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Davis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 149 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 149 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 66. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File number 66 from the Select Natural Resource Funding, an act relating to state-funded conservation easements, imposing requirements on recipients of state funds, specifying terms of the agreement between the state and fund recipients, prohibiting specified conditions for the receipt of funds, specifying applicability of the act, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 66 and Gross State-Funded Conservation Easement Restrictions, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Semlich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File number 66 do pass, and I'll ask the good Majority Floor Leader to explain the bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, taking a little bit of my own medicine here. This bill does 4 things. It puts a little bit of sideboards on conservation easements. And the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee had an extra meeting last year specifically to review these easements and review the effect of them and review the effects that they were having on landowners and on mineral developers and on other people. And so we came up with 4 things which are incorporated into this bill. Number one, we said from now on, any conservation easement that's funded with money from the state of Wyoming, and that includes money from the Wildlife Trust Fund, will include the state of Wyoming as a third-party beneficiary, so that if there's a fallback, if all else fails, if the entity to which the easement is granted fails to do its due diligence, fails to enforce it, if maybe it fails, we have one that's failing now, and when they fail, their easements have to go to a different entity that accomplishes the same purpose. But clear back behind that, this would put the state of Wyoming in as a third-party beneficiary that can enforce these easement agreements. Number two, it says, and I'm now on page two at line 16, it says no funds will be dispersed under this act for the purchase of easements which mandate specific livestock or crop management practices. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. We're going to leave that those livestock and crop management practices to the landowner. Number three, it says that we won't spend any money for easements that prohibit the use of the land for ranching and farming if it could be conducted under either current or future technologies and techniques, as long as there's a qualifier right on the end. I'm in page one and page or line one on page three, without infringing on the underlying purpose of the easement. These easements are typically for wildlife habitat. We would have to maintain an aspect of wildlife habitat. But we know how much agriculture's changed in the last 50 years. I'm sure it'll be much different in the next 50 years. That's okay. We won't fund easements that would restrict progress in agriculture as long as we can maintain the underlying purpose, which in most instances, as I say, is wildlife habitat. The fourth thing it does is it says we won't fund an easement that is going to make a permanent prohibition against hunting or fishing or trapping on the land. That's all it says. In other words, we won't encumber land so that hunting, fishing, and trapping can never take place again, even if the landowner wants to allow it. And again, it's going to leave the discretion to the landowner whether to allow hunting, fishing, and trapping unqualifiedly, with qualifications, or as it may be, but the easement is not going to dictate that. So those are the four things it does, Madam Chairman, and I would stand for questions, and if not, call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Sam... Representative Patton.
Sorry, I'm not as quick on my feet as I used to be. What does it say, hunting, fishing, and trapping, on my bill? And I don't have an amendment that states hunting, fishing, and trapping. Perhaps it's there, and I just didn't see it, or I don't have it.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, that appears on line 5 of page 3 of the engrossed bill. And it was, well, I don't know whether it was an amendment or not.
Anyone else?
Madam Chairman, I don't have the engrossed copy. Thank you.
Okay. Question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 66 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Senate File 66 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 137. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 137 is introduced by Senator Burns, an act relating to protection of animals, providing for authority to prevent animal cruelty and to take charge of certain animals as specified, making conforming changes and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 137 engrossed protection of animals, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Greer, Winters, and Dan Zwanicher. Those who voted no, Representatives Eklund, Hunt, McKim, and Semlich. Signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Semlich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 137 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation bill over to our good representative from House District 43.
Mr. Vice Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Please present Senate File 137. This started out and still is a very simple technical cleanup bill But according to your email and other correspondence you've received, it has some kind of nefarious consequences. So I'm here to dispel the myths on that. If you'll remember, those of you who were here in 2011, we redid the livestock statutes, and we bifurcated them to basically take pet animals out of the livestock board's purview and put them in a separate section of law. So the livestock board was no longer in charge of every dumb animal under the state, is what the title was, and they are just now in charge of livestock, and we set pet animals or domesticated animals in Title VI. What we did when we did that, and if anybody gets bored and wants to look at Statute 1129-108, we added the word livestock in front of the word animal under our animal cruelty statutes. And when we did that, we exempted all dogs, cats, and domesticated animals from continuing to fall under the statute as they have for 120 years. The statute, actually, interesting enough, still pertains to livestock cruelty and being able to take your horse-drawn buggy as property if you're abusing your horse while it's pulling your carriage. That's how long we've had the statute. Statute was in place until 2011. We made an inadvertent error by putting the word livestock in front of animal and exempted all dogs and cats from being able to be seized if abuse is happening. So right now, if you see someone abusing an animal, you can cite that person, but you can't take the animal out of their possession. We've had that until 2011. Small mistake under the law. So that's the need for the bill. All we've done in the bill, if you look at page 2, we've added Q&R right out of the livestock statutes in Title 11 and put them in Title 6. There was, however, a whole lot of concern on this move. I'm not exactly sure why, but based on concerns of the committee and concerns of the committee and testimony, I do have a standing committee amendment that I'd like to present right now, Madam Chairman.
Representative, I believe it's a committee of the whole amendment.
That's what I meant, Madam Chairman. I'd move committee of the whole amendment number 1 to Senate File 137 and ask for your favorable introduction. And I'll try to get through this as quick as possible. So basically what we've done is four separate things. This bill, there's an enhanced penalty if you resist a peace officer in the discharge of their duties. There's some concern with this enhanced penalty. So if you look on the amendment, lines 1 through 7 of the amendment, take off this enhanced penalty. We have a word change on page 2, line 20, the word negligence to neglect. So it's in cases of gross or willful neglect. The lawyer on our committee thought that was a better word, and the attorneys in the office agreed. Neglect is probably the word we want to use. On page 3, it used to say owner. What I'd like to say is person or persons accused of abandoning, neglecting, or cruelly treating. This would apply if your pet is at a boarding facility and you're out of town or out of the country and your pet's being abused. They can confiscate it even though you, and you as the owner are not responsible. The person causing the neglect is responsible. Again, on page 3, line 15, changing negligence to neglect. And then I know we all heard some concerns over your email on due process, and so I'm proposing to add a section on page 3, line 17, that if an animal is seized in this subsection, it shall be released if criminal charges are not filed against the person suspected of abandoning, neglecting, or cruelly treating the animal within 5 days of the seizure, and they pay for the food, shelter, and care of the animal. If anyone really wants to divide the food, care of the animal out of there, I'm perfectly fine with that. Some of the concern in committee was you're going to be feeding your pet animal either way, regardless of you doing it or you're paying for it to be done while the animal is being held on suspicion. Otherwise, your other option would be in Romanet 3, under the order of a court of competent jurisdiction, releasing the seized animal. So that's how you get your animal back, or if the charges are dropped, etc. But if the charges aren't filed in 5 days of possession of your domesticated pet, you get your pet returned to you. And I hope that satisfies the due process concerns that were raised in committee and raised in some of your emails. And I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
We're on committee of the whole amendment number 1. Are there any questions? Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Committee of the whole amendment number 1 passes. We're back on the bill. Okay. Representative Wallace.
Madam Chairman, rising in opposition to this bill, the amendment that was just adopted really does not in any way address the due process private property issues that are being created by this bill. For instance, you'll notice that in the amendment You could have your animals taken from you. You could have that completely dismissed, but you are still going to have to pay the cost, whatever that cost may be. Is that the labor of the shelter? Is that, you know, all those things can be added up. Lots of people buy their feed in bulk at very reasonable cost, so just saying, oh, you'd have to be feeding them at home or you'd have to be feeding them at the shelter, it's not a one-to-one. The fact is, animals, pet animals, are property. And before property can be taken from you, it has to be through a due process that ensures that you have been provided your rights. And this bill does not provide animal owners any kind of due process protections. That's pretty much the bottom line. I had sent around to you numerous letters. It was interesting to me that in the committee, the sponsoring senator claimed that he had never heard any of these concerns, when in fact, multiple messages had been sent to every senator on the floor. So these concerns by the, particularly the dog industry, are very valid. They merit at the very least some consideration. Because here's what's happening. We have pretty good protections on the livestock side. The sponsor was correct. We do have fairly good due process protections there. What we're doing here is we're moving this over into the criminal statutes, and we don't have any of those due process protections for pet animal owners and pet animal breeders. I don't see the need for this bill at this time. It can certainly be taken up over the interim, as my understanding is that the committee has intentions to do anyway. So my advice is to disallow this bill going any further.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Rising on and against the bill, and if you, members of the body, if you'll turn to page 2, line 18, you'll see a clear delineation where they're separating livestock from the conversation, and that should be your first red flag. Anytime you see them come in a piece of legislation like this and clearly delineate and create a difference between livestock and other animals in this sort of format, there's been an erosion of private property rights, and this is really what this boils down to. I would urge you to please vote no.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Sometimes in this body, my mind is just blown away on how this works. Okay, so once again, what this bill does, and it's rare I completely disagree with two speakers ago, but this is the same exact statute as in the livestock statutes. There's no due process right now for livestock owners, so if you're taking someone's cows, horses, pigs, bison, or yaks, they have the same exact process. And so we're not doing anything nefarious. This is what we did in 2011. We said the livestock board is not in control, or it's their purview for domestic animals, so we moved them to a different statute, Title VI. So in Title VI, we're copying Title XI to the exact same thing we do for livestock as we do for pet animals. And certainly we can amend the bill. Actually, I even looked. It's open enough that if we want to put more due process in both pet animals and livestock, we can certainly do that with this bill, for what I've been told. I didn't try to do that on this amendment because I thought it would murky the waters. But I'd like to remind you the exact same thing that we do for livestock, and we've done since 1892 when we put the statute in place. If you take someone's livestock, you have to pay for their food and care, and you get a lien against them. Actually, what I did in the standing committee, in the committee of the whole amendment, we took the lien provision off for pet animals because I don't think you need a lien against your dog or cat. The lien for livestock remains. So actually, you have more of a penalty right now if they take your livestock than they do if you take your pet animal because they can't put liens against your dog. So I don't see anything nefarious against this bill. It's a simple correction of what we did that copies the exact same statute from Title 11 as in Title 6 because the Livestock Board no longer has purview over domestic animals. I can't stress that enough. Thank you.
Representative Nicholas.
I just have a question for the bringer of the bill.
And looking at the statute, it looks like the definition of animal cruelty includes carrying an animal in a manner that poses undue risk or injury. Does that mean that a law enforcement officer can pick you up if he believes that the dog in your pickup back of your bed is unsafe or undue necessary just because you're carrying your dog in your pickup truck and not tied down?
Representative Zonitzer.
Madam Chairman, I would say tentatively that could be allowed. The problem in the whole discussion we've had since 2009 on these statutes is we have more and more police officers that may not be from Wyoming and are from bigger cities. And so in the livestock statutes, you probably have a brand inspector most often who understands animal welfare or livestock welfare a little better. But this is up to if a certified peace officer sees what he believes is a crime being committed against an animal for cruelty, and we do have a pretty good cruelty statute on torment, neglect. I don't have it in front of me, but it's in Title 6, 3, I think it's in 201 or 202, on what defines cruelty to an animal. I'm not sure just a dog in the back of a pickup truck meets that wording in that statute, but this is generally at the police officer's discretion based on 6-2-201.
Representative Nicholas.
And thank you. And it looks to me like then, if that's the case under this new language, they can take the dog, they can fine you $200, and then even if they return it, you got to pay for the upkeep and care of the dog because they don't like the way that the dog hangs out in your pickup truck. Is that right?
Representative Swanson.
Madam Chairman, I would submit to you that a dog in a pickup truck does not meet the threshold of what is defined as neglect and abuse in the statutes right now. The other part of the good bringer's question is probably true. Yes, you would have to reimburse if they think a crime is being committed and they hold your pet for up to 5 days and charges aren't brought. You are still responsible for the care, for payment of the care of that animal during that time. The same as the animal is in your possession, you'd hopefully be feeding it and watering it.
Good question. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 137 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The Chair is in doubt. All those in favor? All those opposed? More than 15. Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. We just did that. Moving along, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll. Baker. Baker. Excused. Barlow. Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins. Blevins. Blevin. Blickrey. Excused. Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison. Excused. Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman. Gay. Gingery. Gingery. Goggles. Greer. Green. Halverson. Harshman. Harvey. Hunt. Hutchings. Yagi. Kasparic. Kirkbride. Croker. Crone. Larson. Lockhart. Laux,
no.
Madden,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Northrup,
no.
Patton,
no.
Paxton,
no.
Petroff, Piperinen,
no.
Reeder,
no.
Semlich,
no.
Summers,
no.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
no.
Wallace, Walters,
no.
Watt,
here.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
no.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
Gingery,
excuse.
Gingrey, excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Flickery?
Aye.
Flickery, aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 20 aye, 37 no, 3 excused.
Pursuant to H.R. 6-6B, Senate File 137, having failed, a roll call vote is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 136. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 136, submitted by Senator Burns, an act relating to oil and gas, modifying certi provisions for seismic activities, modifying rule requirements, conforming provisions, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 136 engrossed, Seismic Exploration 3, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlick, Winters, Dens, Wanitzer, signed by Representative Semlick, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Semlick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 136 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of the Senate file over to our good majority floor leader.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, this bill addresses a shortcoming that we left when we did the whole Split Estate Act. And in the Split Estate Act, we had a bonding requirement that basically it's a relief mechanism and says if the operator and the landowner can't make a deal, the operator has the option to go to the Oil and Gas Commission and bond onto the property for a $2,000 bond. And that was intended to be a $2,000 bond per location or per oil well. And in the Split Estate Act, what we left undone was any consideration about seismic activity. And so the Oil and Gas Commission has been doing the $2,000 bond for everything. The problem with that is that seismic activity doesn't involve a small concentrated site like an oil well. It's sometimes thousands of acres. And in those thousands of acres, a lot of damage can be done with these dumper trucks running around, disrupting wildlife, disrupting livestock, caving in culverts, breaking down bridges, tearing fences up, whatever it may be. And so this is a fix for the Split Estate Act that will do a couple of things. It changes the bonding requirement to $5,000 for the first 1,000 acres and $1,000 for each additional 1,000 acres. And these are big projects, many of these seismic operations. And so this puts together a bond that's more fitting to the size of the project and really will drive better negotiations between the landowner and the seismic explorer. The other thing it does is it says that the bond can only be posted by an oil and gas operator or his agent or someone under contract with him who has a valid lease. And there is some speculative activity going on where seismic companies are going out and trying to do the seismic activity, develop the information, and then sell it someplace. And this would stop that and say that the seismic activity can't take place unless there's a valid lease. And in, what it does is ensure that private property owners are protected from seismic operations if the company doesn't have either a surface use agreement or authorization from the mineral lessee. So that's the bill. And, Madam Chairman, at this time I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. This is some technical language that LSO found yesterday that we had to change in the bill to make it track with the Split Estate Act. And it is technical language, and I'd stand for questions on the amendment, or if not, call for the question on the amendment.
All right, question being called on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed, and we're back on the bill.
Call for the question, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Question being called. All those in favor. Sorry. Are you sure, Representative Miller?
Absolutely, Madam Chairman. This bill is an old friend. We had it over here in the House already. The House disposed of it earlier this particular session. I mentioned earlier about a finger on the golden goose with the bill we passed about an hour ago. This is another finger on the golden goose. This is going to make it more difficult to discover these natural resources that we tax in Wyoming. We don't tax these call centers, folks. Did you know that? We really don't tax ag other than the property value. Our revenue in Wyoming comes from these industries. Again, this is another finger on the golden goose. We've got two fingers just today. So you wanna look at a future income tax? Vote for this bill.
Mr. Minority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I come from this industry. I used to work for a seismic outfit, and I managed crews like this. Unfortunately, there are bad actors in that industry, which I came from, and I can definitely see the genesis of this bill. So, unfortunately, to reel in the bad actors in my former industry, I'm on them for the bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, this bill is about private property rights, and I don't know. I don't think that golden goose probably owns any private property. And so maybe he doesn't care. It's not an onerous provision. It's not a large bond. It does provide some measure of protection. The bond probably seldom is used, but a $2,000 bond for a $100,000 project just doesn't give the landowner any bargaining power at all. This bond will drive the parties to a better agreement. I don't think it'll be utilized a lot. In those few instances where it is, it's not an onerous bond given the size of the projects and the amount of damage that could be done.
Representative Nicholas.
Just for further edification, this bill passed the Judiciary Interim Committee, and we all supported it at that time, and then it got lost in the shuffle when it got here, but the prior Judiciary Committee passed it.
Question. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A little quick at the gun there today. Madam Chairman, you know, as far as bonding the right amount and all that, I don't really have a problem with those numbers. One of the issues I have is the lack of the ability for these seismic companies. Frankly, these might even be groups of entrepreneurs that put together money to go in and do a 3D seismic in an area to see if there's any potential there. To require these folks to go out and also acquire the oil and gas rights to this land, that's not going to help the exploration process to discover these additional resources here in Wyoming. So, again, I don't like the bill. I ask you to vote no. If it makes it to second and third, I'll try to come up with an amendment maybe to solve some of my issues with the bill. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Question? All right. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Sedlick's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 137 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 137 has passed the committee. Senate File 136 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 160. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 160, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to pesticides, providing for direct supervision by licensed applicators, providing definitions, providing rulemaking authority for reciprocal agreements, providing penalties, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 160, engrossed pesticides, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Simlick, Winters, Danswanter, signed by Representative Simlick, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Sedlick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 160 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to our good colleague from House District 43.
Chairman Sedlick, there's a standing committee amendment.
Madam Chair, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and see if I can struggle with the explanation of it. I didn't have it in front of me. Section C, this Standing Committee Amendment says, except as otherwise provided by the Wyoming Environmental Pesticide Control Act of 1973, no political subdivision of the state shall adopt or enforce any ordinance, resolution, rule, or regulation regarding pesticide storage, sale, distribution, notification of use, or use that is more stringent than the Wyoming Environmental Pesticide Control Act of 1973. So what this does is it's kind of like what we've done in other issues where we discourage local governments all over the state to establish their own regulations by ordinance of what they can and cannot do with respect to pesticides that are used within the corporate limits of town. So that's what the Standing Committee Amendment does, and I would ask for your support.
Is there any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Pesticides 160. I will attempt to go somewhat quickly if you don't have anybody get up against me on this one. Simple little bill. The need for the bill is really to control bad actors, or what we call rogue pesticide applicators. So run into the bill quickly. Section 1 adds direct supervision and clearly defines the direct supervision being within an hour and 50 minutes of the person being supervised. And this language comes out of FIPRA, the Federal Insecticide and Rodenticide Act, and we've had that in place since the 70s. But it does allow Wyoming applicators the advantage of allowing unlicensed persons to make these applications under this provision, because we have all of these there are four higher applicators. They're subject to direct supervision as long as they're within the parameters we've put forth in FIFRA and in this bill. The past 5 years, we have had these people try to supervise operations in Wyoming from Denver, Salt Lake, Billings, and Kansas City. This just puts us in conformance with federal law. Page 3, Section 2, it clarifies the definitions of pesticides. It includes old products, new products, bringing in prior regulations of old pesticides that they can, how we label them, what's considered a sample, pesticide dealer, pesticide distributor, or director, all those. On the top of page 5, we're just requiring certified applicators to notify the Department of Changes in Employment within 30 days. It also allows the director to refuse or suspend a request for a reciprocal license, and that's really what we're getting at here is reciprocal licenses with other states. And we actually also, we have the appeal in accordance with the APA should they need one. Page 6, we are allowing the department to do rules and regs to adopt criteria for reciprocal licenses. We've amended the penalty section on page 6 for the department to seek restitution from the applicator if the applicator commits a violation. Page 7, we amend the section that if you misapply a pesticide and it's either a registered or unregistered pesticide, it's also unlawful. So it's just a standard change in line with FIFRA. And we talked about the Standing Committee Amendment already that would also go at the end on page 7. So if there's any questions on the Pesticide Act, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have a brief question. I think this bill is a good bill. My concern with the direct supervision provision has to deal with compliance with federal law. And, if we can get away with it, I think it's great. But I just want to make sure that we're not getting ourselves into trouble.
Mr. Vice Chair, can you assure the Chairman that we're not going to get in trouble?
I hate to make such statements. I do not believe we are. This is in line with the federal act, and I think what we heard in committee and as this bill moves through and I talk to pesticide applicators, that this is somewhat more expansive but certainly in line with federal guidelines and allows us to have supervision but not direct supervision, but it is in the purview, and we don't foresee any problems happening with this language.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlick's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 160 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 160 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 47. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File number 47 from the Education Committee, an act relating to school finance, authorizing data access to retirement information for model monitoring and other education data purposes subject to specified limitations, expanding monitoring and reporting process, adjusting cost of the education study components to the education resource block grant funding model as specified, modifying repayment interest for advanced foundation payments to school districts, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 47 in gross school finance amendments, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Escobar, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 47 do pass. I further move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'd encourage your no vote on the Standing Committee Amendment. The Standing Committee Amendment does two things. They're both good things, but I think we improve it with the Committee of the Whole amendment that follows. The first removes a provision put on by the other House on page 2, and 3, which basically opens up our retirement system to a complete data mine by Workforce Services. We have rejected that in the interim. It's probably not even legal. This is not Big Brother imaginary. This is truly Big Brother mining data, and it's not proper to do, and so we took that out, and that's going to be in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. The rest of the bill, Madam Chair, really there's three parts that are probably that are significant changes. First is on page 6, where currently districts receive their payments in November and May. Sometimes those payments are disputed and late. They have to borrow from the foundation account, and we've charged interest. These are generally recapture districts, usually the Sweetwater and the Campbell districts. So this provision, then, we would not charge interest. It's the right thing to do, and so that was adopted by the Joint Committee of the Senate, actually the Senate amendment. The next is really on page 7 at the bottom on Romanet I, where we adjust the cost-based model, and this is for office supplies and accessories was slightly costed up, and the energy category, the component, was slightly costed down. And with that, then, the biggest issues are really in the Standing Committee amendment. Madam Chair, I've distributed two colored charts. Everybody likes to look and see where their school district is at. The green chart is the Standing Committee amendment, and that I urge you to defeat. And you can see there are several negatives there. This is the first of all, the Supreme Court in a state as large and diverse as Wyoming, as you can imagine, it's not surprising that the basket of goods needs to be cost adjusted. Certainly, the cost of living and doing business in Jackson is different than Lusk, than is different than Evanston and Campbell, and we're just very diverse. So the Supreme Court has mandated that we accommodate for these adjustments. So going back to really 2000 and then in 2005 in the first recalibration, we had our choice of the Wyoming Cost of Living Index called the WCLI, or the hedonic wage, or then we considered the minimum of 100 on the WCLI. And we chose, as a legislature, a policy to include the greater of the three. And so we allowed districts then to choose the WCLI, which Teton County uses, and some others, sublet, have always ridden the WCLI. Others can use the hedonic. And then still others, many smaller districts, can use the minimum 100. You can see at the bottom left hand of that chart, the green chart, and you can see the folks that in this amendment who are minimum 100. There's 17 school districts, about 14% of the ADM of the state. That costs about $6 million a year to bring those folks up to 100. And we have really never disputed that. I've supported that back in 2005 and again in 2010. I think Campbell Tews spoke to this a little bit and said the idea is not really in regional cost adjusting to take money away from people. The next group are the WCLI folks, who there's 9 districts. about 19% of the ADM, and I'm on the bottom left-hand corner of this chart. It's about a $6.9 million adjustment. And then these other districts, 22, would be in this 2011 Adonic. And really the cost of that is going to be about $7 million, you can see on the right-hand. But this compares to the 2011 Adonic. This 2011 Adonic was controversial when it was brought to us last year because it includes a thing called the Comparable Wage Index. And that was never done in our Adonic before. And we did not recalibrate the Adonic during the 2010 recalibration because the Select Committee said we're going to wait till the census comes out. There was a little issue with a town in Park County we thought would bump over 10,000 population. Did not. But we waited and got the most updated data. That data was brought to this body last year, and it was rejected. And the issue that some folks have with the Comparable Wage Index is that it is a coarse measure, and it has to have 100,000 people in each measure. Well, in Wyoming, you can't get that. And so, and I could quote the economists that put it together, basically, that it is coarse and is subject to error because you have to take wide swaths. And, for example, Natrona and Fremont were lumped together to get 100,000. Well, it lowered Fremont and raised Natrona. Campbell, Crook, West, and Niobrara were swept together. It lowered Campbell, rose those others up. And so it was felt by this body a year ago that a county-by-county adjustment is more appropriate. So that's what the Committee of the Whole Amendment does. It is the most recent data that we have. I've talked to the economists at the University of Wyoming who have been involved in this issue for 15 years on hedonic wage. They've recommended that the use of the most updated data minus the CWI is the way to go with this. And so, and we'll get to that amendment in a minute. And it's a little less amount, and you can see where it comes from. It comes from primarily my county and the land where the water's sweet, but it's a more even and fair adjustment. And so that's what we've tried to bring. And I would just say to you that this idea of cost adjusting, it's not an option to us. And the court has been very clear. We've built it into our model. And if we fail to do this, the folks who are writing the hedonic wage are in 2002, 3, and 4 data. So the data now is 10 years old. And certainly things have changed in Wyoming in the last 10 years. So that is a quick primer on that, and so I urge your no vote on the Standing Committee Amendment, and we'll deal with the Committee of the Whole Amendments.
Okay. Thank you, friends. I know that this is a difficult bill to not look at with all of the amendments together, but we do need to do the Standing Committee Amendment and then move to the Committee of the Whole Amendment. So we are on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. Question being called. All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, say no.
No.
Okay. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has failed. We're back on the bill. Representative Teeters.
Madam Chairman, why don't we go ahead and have the Appropriations Chair move the Committee of the Whole Amendment. We'll talk about that.
Thank you. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 47. Members, this is that data mining provision that the other body put in this bill. For workforce services to have full access to all of our retirees' data, Social Security numbers, everything. And we're not sure that it's, obviously we don't think it's right, and we don't even think it's legal. And so we wanted to take that out. I'd urge your support and stand for questions on that.
Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We're now on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 and ask for your favorable consideration. Members, this is the regional cost adjustment. Now, if you look at the amendment, the entire first page is just existing statute. So if you flip over to the second page, you can see an existing statute on page 2 of the amendment. That is in existing statute on line 4 that districts can choose the hedonic wage index or the Wyoming cost of living index. And then if you go down to line 7 or the 100-100 index value as prescribed. So we continue with that policy that we've had in place. Now, new language on line 11, Roman 1 talks about what the hedonic wage is, and it specifies in numeral 1 on line 18. That is the auto-regressive random effects hedonic wage, which and you can read down, computed in accordance with our most recent data on August 2011, without inclusion of the comparative wage index, the end of line 21 and line 22, as an uncontrollable factor, and that then this will be updated annually to reflect changes in student demographic data and the Wyoming cost of living index. And then what I did, members, in this, and I just, there's a few districts that as you move to the hedonic update, and it's a small amount, about $800,000 scattered among about 10 districts that would actually take a dip, and I wanted to basically hold those folks harmless. And so numeral 2 on line 26 says hedonic wage index in effect prior to school year 2013-14. So that is the 2005 index. And you can see that reflected in the blue chart that is on your desk. And you can see that most are zeros, and you can see what index your school district will ride here for the next year. So you can just take a minute and go down through those. You can see that the cost of this is considerably cheaper, $2.7 million cheaper than the previous mark. And then you can also look in the bottom left-hand corner. The number of districts in the 2005 hedonic is 10. That's a difference from the cost-based model, about $2.1 million, and that's the green model. And then you can see where really why it's gotten cheaper, those folks who have moved to this 2011 hedonic without the comparable wage index, and that is primarily Natrona, takes a million-dollar dip in this amendment, and the Sweetwaters is where most of that occurs on the adjustments. If you look from blue to green sheets, you can see it doesn't affect the WCLI folks or the minimum 100s. So our policy would stay intact, and we do what we need to do is to account for regional cost differences. So I'd stand for any questions, Madam Chair.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Rising on and against the amendment, and this is a complicated issue that many of you probably do not understand, and it's difficult to get your mind wrapped around, especially on the last bill of the last day. And the difficulty that I have with us taking this action now is that I have argued all along that if we're going to have a regional cost adjustment, that we need to pick a single instrument and uniformly apply it across the districts. Otherwise, what you've done is created an environment where it would be like having a basketball team, for example. And so you've got members of the basketball team, and some of them are shorter than others, and some of them aren't nearly as proficient as others. So the rules don't apply uniformly across the whole team. Some people, the free throw line is up here. So for some people, the basketball hoop's just a little bit lower. And so what we're doing is by creating this system where you allow people to pick and cherry pick in between which instruments, what might benefit them the best, you create inequity. And you create inequity that's very hard to identify, and it's very hard to argue against, because what we've done is we've brought everyone up. If you go and look at the sheet here with the blue line on it, this is what you'd be adopting, and there are no losers. So from my perspective, it's very difficult as the chairman of the Education Committee to try and encourage us to set good policy when no one loses. How would you like to be in that situation? No one loses under this scenario, and I think it's bad policy. We brought the hedonic wage index to the floor last year, and it was rejected on introduction. That was frustrating for me because we had spent many, many meetings discussing it. A lot of money went into developing that model, and we didn't even get the opportunity to talk about it, but the districts were the ones that fought that. They were the ones that sent the emails that defeated that amendment. And we've got plenty of time to let this thing ride. The WCLI is a component that is constantly updated, so to argue that we're not updating any components is not accurate. People are still being funded with models that are updating. But the bottom line is we will recalibrate in 2015. And at that point in time, I would like to try and find a way to rebase salaries, to look at a different approach possibly to try and create equity. But this idea of now creating a fourth-legged stool, we're going from a three-legged stool to a fourth-legged stool, creates more inequity, in my opinion, and not less. So I would urge you to please vote no. We will consider this, and we will come up with a better solution in the future. This Senate File 47 was drafted by the Joint Education Committee. And it was drafted in such a way that allowed this to be attached to it. And I will never allow that to happen again. We will be much more precise in the way we title and draft these bills, because this bill was intended to be used for the Education Resource Block Grant model to update certain components of that. It was never intended to be used as a vehicle to implement the hedonic wage index. So I would urge you to please vote no.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's rare that the Chairman of Education and I agree on a school finance bill. I agree with the three different methods, but I urge some caution on this amendment. 4 years ago, we ended a generation of school finance litigation where we as the state of Wyoming financed both sides of the school finance litigation, both for the plaintiffs and the defendants. And we litigated and litigated and litigated. And finally, we got a model that the litigation ended 4 years ago. And so for 4 years, we've been quiet. We heard testimony not this last summer, but the summer before. The Joint Education Committee heard testimony and came with a bill to do what the good chairman had asked for after hearing testimony all summer long in committee. And this body decided not to hear that bill and to not go to the single unified process. And the good chairman of appropriation has done some good work and consulted with lots and lots of important experts about the application of these indices, but he's the only one. And although I trust him implicitly, I would like to maybe ask some questions of those experts too, to see how the application of this information comes. And so if you look at Senate File 47 and what's in that bill, you find that none of that had anything to do with regional cost adjustments and rebasing and readjusting and spending $5 million more dollars than what we're already spending now adjusting. And I do agree that probably some adjustment is necessary. But unless you know what you're spending this $5 million on, and unless you know that it's scientifically based, and unless you know that you're not going to get yourself a generation of litigation, I would urge you to be careful. Be very, very careful.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This, as I look at this and trying to remember all the things we did, I have been questioning ever since we started this, and maybe the good chair can help understand. We're trying to keep people not losing and do the best we can. Why are some districts able to give $10,000 Christmas bonuses? Does that fit into this? Some districts can't, and some districts can. Bridger Valley doesn't. Does that have anything to do with this? And are we trying to have some equality among things? And are we creating equality that really isn't equality? So I guess I just ask.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple things, and I think we've kind of gotten off what the amendment does and the bill does, but the point was brought up by the good chair of education that no one loses. But, in fact, the folks who get adjusted every year on the WCLI, they do, in fact, lose. You know, Teton was at one time 132. They've been adjusted downward as economic conditions change. The folks who have really not lost are those under 100, because they move from 88 to 92 or 85, but they always stay at 100. And that's a considerable cost. But, see, I'll give you the history on this before the members who spoke were here. We had this debate in 05, and we thought, this is such a diverse state. We, at that time, are not going to shut down our small towns. I was in support of keeping the 100 base there, absolutely. But I also support places that are way out on the far edge of this, like the Tetons and the Sublettes, who have these extremely high costs back in 2005. It was an aberration to all the data. You couldn't account for it. And so Wyoming is such a diverse state. To think that this body will ever develop a one-size-fits-all, I think there's some swampland in Florida, I could say, before that ever happens. Hey, we most recently tried it last year going to two, and it was resoundingly defeated on this floor. It wasn't even close. And so that's a little of the history. Now, about the litigation piece, when you have 60% of the ADM in this state that has not been cost-adjusted and is riding on 10-year-old data, that's a problem. And so the law doesn't say recalibrate when the numbers are convenient. The law says recalibrate. And we failed to do that last year. And there's a lot of history behind this. We probably don't have time to go through it, but the bottom line, we have not done it for political reasons. So when the good speaker talks about lawsuits, I agree. It might not be the Campbell Five, but there'll be others. You can't hold these counties down, Sweetwaters, others, at over 10, now we'll be going on 15 years of old data, and expect people to sit, especially when you have inequities and those folks who are under 100 continually get moved up 10, 12 points to 100. And so that's the part I guess I would urge caution. And the good speaker said be careful. I'd be careful of not acting. And I think we've sat on this for political reasons long enough. And to think again that we are going to get to one index, I don't think the folks in Teton are going to be wild about any hedonic or sublet or around the state. And I know the folks under 100 aren't going to want to let go of that bringing folks up to 100. I think those are with us. And the Supreme Court has blessed that. And this is a simple update of the model we have with 2011 data. That's all it is. It's not a new model or anything else. It's an update of what we've done in the past with the best data we have, not 2003-04 data. So I urge your support. Thank you.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Foolhardy for me to come up and just reiterate what has just been said, but I want to lend the support to the fact that you're not changing the model. The model remains the same. You're updating it. If your team that you were talking about is all short, that doesn't mean that they're going to win the game. It means that those people that are up to date and current are probably the ones that need the support or are entitled to the support, representing over 60% of the student population. So it seems to me that the charge that we have here is to try and be as current as we possibly can, as opposed to being status quo in another study that uses back years back data. I was occasioned with a industry that made just incredible profits. If bottom lines were dollars, they used life expectancy tables that were always out of date, never really going along with the fact that the rates were higher than what they were necessarily entitled to, and they reaped good profits. That can't be the case when we look at education, of the public education of the state of Wyoming. So on and for the amendment.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have some questions. I don't know which way to be on this, but one thing that I remember was that as far as the model and the basket of goods, that the last number I heard of, we were 100 million overfunded, you know, and I truly realize that, you know, that doesn't mean that that 100 million is equiproportionate to across all school districts. Maybe some are way overfunded and some are way under, but I need some help with that. And then another thing that really troubles me that we hardly ever hear in this body is, and you might remember from what October or February 6th, the man downstairs sent up a couple of graphs. And the one graph that caught my attention, it has kind of the same pattern of the graph that we've seen up here with respect to the general fund. and projected expenditures and so on. But the way that one looks, it looks like we're going to be out of money for the foundation program in 2013 and 14. And I guess if you couple those two things together, I just wonder if the preponderance of evidence is such that we really should be making another $5 million expenditure out of this. And that's just kind of where I'm coming from. I, you know, when those two, that blue line and red line from that graph comes together on the foundation account, that's what we always talk about as a rainy day, because we get the double whammy. We end up having lower than necessary assessed value to cash flow the thing, and the costs keep going up, and we end up pulling more out, and that's when we have to be worried. And I, you know, maybe this $5 million doesn't make that much difference. It might keep us from going broke maybe 2 months early or something, but I just want to discuss it from the practicality standpoint, I guess.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate the question. And that's kind of some of the urban legend around here about the overfunded $100 million model. And I can tell you, because I was in the legislature in those days, and I was on the Education Committee, and we made choices as a body. The consultants brought their model, and we said, yeah, we like that model, but we also want this. We want instructional facilitators, we want summer school, and we want class sizes at 16. For our elementary schools, and that cost $100 million. So we didn't, like, make a mistake and overfund the consultant model. We chose a legislative model. That's what we put into policy. We put it into statute. So that's that issue. As far as the school side revenues, I'm glad you asked that, because I was working on that issue just yesterday, going out two more bienniums, 4 years. And when you look on the school side, and your same argument on general fund budget, we don't profile capital gains as a significant amount. But if you look at this, it has no accounting for the surplus. And profiled right now is about a $700 million surplus on the school side 4 years from now. And we have this interplay between CapCon and foundation program where they've each supported each other, and we've linked those together on the school side. So that's the numbers, and I'd be happy to show you the profile.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think we're wrapping this debate up, and I appreciate, for no other reason than to maybe expose some of the new members to this conversation. But I, once again, would urge you to vote no. Real simply, if you vote no on the amendment, the funding structure that remains in place will continue in place until we recalibrate in 2015. If you vote aye on the amendment, we will spend an additional $5 million in these areas. And this is not monopoly money. This is foundation dollars. So I think there have been points that have been well made. I do have grave concerns about making this even more complicated than it is right now. And I think until we can get back to a point where we can have a real conversation about an equitable way to deal with regional cost adjustment, I would urge you to please vote no.
Question being called. We are on.
Madam Chair, if I could wrap it up.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. Just real quick, I think this is not a change in policy. It's an update of the data. And, again, you use the most accurate data. I mean, that's what we're charged to do in the law, is not to just recalibrate when it's convenient, when the numbers fit. And so I urge your adoption. It's the right thing to do, and it's the thing we're really commanded to do. So appreciate your aye vote. Thank you.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2. Please say aye. Those opposed, say no. Committee of the Whole Amendment 2 has failed. Okay. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed?
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 has failed. We're back on the bill. Is there any other discussion of the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Hushman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 47 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 47 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next, all those in favor, please stand. Representative Greer, where are you? Okay. All those opposed? Less than 41? Okay. Senate File 47 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 56. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 56, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to adult protective services, allowing access to records as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, in Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 56 engrossed, Access to Records, Vulnerable Adult Abuse, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Throne, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Before the reading of the bill, what's your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 56 do pass. And I turn the explanation over to the good woman from Laramie County.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The purpose of this bill is to provide a slight amendment to the record provisions in our Adult Protective Services statutes. All those records are confidential, and this creates a narrow and limited exception to make available records to the guardian of a vulnerable adult, and vulnerable adult is a defined term in the statute. So to make the records available to the adult, the legal guardian, agents under advanced health care directives, a health care surrogate, and then the personal representative of a deceased vulnerable adult or their wrongful death representative. The difficulty is that under current statute, the guardian of a vulnerable adult could have immediate need for the records, and the only way they can get them now is through subpoena. You'll notice towards the end of the bill on page 2, starting at the end of line 6, if any other vulnerable adults are included in the record, their names are redacted. And then, of course, the records will not be disclosed to the perpetrator of abuse. You know, for example, in those cases where the legal guardian could be the one causing the abuse. And with that, I'd stand for questions. And if there are no questions, I'd call for the question.
Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 56 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 56 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 153.
Senate File 153, introduced by Senator Landon. An act relating to unemployment insurance, amending an exclusion from coverage for newspaper carriers to include direct sellers or independent contractors as specified, providing exclusion criteria and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 153, engrossed unemployment compensation, direct sales, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Throne, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 153 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from House District 60.
Chairman Harvey, I believe there's a standing committee amendment.
I further move the standing committee amendment. Oh, that's Committee of the Whole amendment. So I will wait until the explanation of the bill.
Sorry, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a bill for news newspaper boys, and actually it's not that anymore. When I was delivering newspapers, everybody was teenage, and they were providing direct services for the newspaper. What's happened now is as many of the people that deliver our newspaper are, again, people my age that are paying for their health care costs. So it seems like we can't get out of the newspaper business. Basically, this is a cleanup bill. Since 1996, the federal government has exempted newspapers from collecting or paying unemployment compensation. This bill comes from an audit, and my local newspaper was given a bill for over $100,000 to pay for unemployment insurance for contract services. So the bill specifically does two things. It brings it into compliance, and it adds, if you look on page 2 at the top, by an individual under the age of 18, which was the traditional newsboys, or as a direct sellers or independent contract for the business, which kind of reflects what has happened with newspapers. It recognizes that these newspaper people are direct providers. I think that's the correct term. And basically what happens is that they have to write a written contract to the newspaper or the shopping news publishers, and this, when everything is said and done, will bring us into compliance with the federal law. If Madam Chairman wants, I'll let her do that.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 153. We thought this would be a technical correction on page 2, line 12. After line 19, there had been a C, but so we thought that the LSO could just delete the semicolon and put the word "and," but my understanding is that that required a full amendment. So I would just ask that you ratify the technical amendment and vote aye.
Is there any discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Hearing none, all those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 153 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Senate File 153 has passed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? The motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, the committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. Senate file 118, amended, recommended do pass. Senate file 149, recommended do pass. Senate file 66, recommended do pass. Senate file 137, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senate file 136, amended, recommended do pass. Senate file 160, amended, recommended do pass. Senate file 47, amended, recommended do pass. Senate file 56, recommended do pass. Senate file 153, amended, recommended do pass. Signed by Representative Connolly, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations, Representative Connolly. Brothers and sisters, we have to have a quorum on the floor while I sign all of the enrolled acts. That's our constitutional provision. So first we'll have messages from the Senate, and then I have about 30 enrolled acts to sign. The reason that we're doing it today is we can give them to the governor tomorrow. He has to veto whatever he wants to veto by next Tuesday so that we can do veto overrides if we want to next Wednesday. Or we could stay an extra couple days. It's up to you. So choice of a few minutes or sign them now. So we're at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 382, concurrence passed. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 52, natural gas state vehicles. Ayes 22, no 6, excused 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 383, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 26, Appraisal Management Company Regulation. The House bill listed, the House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 27, noes 1, excused 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 384, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 56, Wyoming Pollution Discharge Elimination System, had 25 ayes, 3 noes, 2 excused. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 385, third reading passed. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 115, wrongful death, tolling of statutes of limitations. Ayes 28, noes 2, 2 excused. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 386, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 163, Adjunct Professor Incentives, ayes 17, noes 11, 2 excused. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 387, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 170, Streamlined Sales Tax, Direct Mail, ayes 25, noes 3, excused 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 388, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 201, Transfer on Death Deed. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated, which was ayes 28, noes 0, excused 2. The Senate respectfully asked the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 389, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 229, Regulation of Natural Gas as a Transportation Fuel. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, no 0, excuse 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 390, conferees appointed. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the House on Amendments to House Bill 91. The Senate conferees are Senator Coe, Chairman, Senator Landon, Senator Rothfuss, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 391, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 77, Wyoming Lottery. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 18, noes 10, excuse 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 392, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 85, Municipal Jurisdiction, Extraterritorial Authority, ayes 26, noes 2, excuse 2. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
With that order of business of signing of enrolled acts, the first enrolled act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act number 81, being original House Bill 68.
Enrolled Act number 81, original House Bill number 68, an act relating to the administration of government.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 81, being original House Bill 68. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 33, being original Senate File 87.
Enrolled Act number 33, original Senate File number 87, an act relating to motor vehicle insurance.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 33, being original Senate File 87. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 34, being original Senate File 126.
Enrolled Act number 34 from original Senate File 126, an act relating to motor vehicles.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 34, being original Senate File 126. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 35, being original Senate File 127.
Enrolled Act number 35 from original Senate File number 127, an act relating to liens.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 35, being original Senate File 127. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 36, being original Senate File 5.
Enrolled Act number 36 from original Senate File number 5, an act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 36, being original Senate File 5. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 37, being original Senate File 22.
Enrolled Act number 37 from original Senate File 22, an act relating to trade and commerce.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 37, being original Senate File 22. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 38, being original Senate File 11.
Enrolled Act number 38 from original Senate File number 11, an act relating to magistrates of the Circuit Court.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 38, being original Senate File 11. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 39, being original Senate File 117.
Enrolled Act number 39 from original Senate File number 117, an act relating to domestic violence protection.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 39, being original Senate File 117. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 40, being original Senate File 7.
Enrolled Act number 40 from original Senate File number 7, an act relating to conservation districts.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 40, being original Senate File 7. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 41, being original Senate File 31.
Enrolled Act number 41 from original Senate File number 31, an act relating to veterinarians.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 41, being original Senate File 31. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for reconsideration is Senate Enrolled Act 42, being original Senate File 64.
Enrolled Act Number 42 from original Senate File Number 64, an act relating to alcohol licensing.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 42, being original Senate File 64. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for reconsideration is Senate Enrolled Act 43, being original Senate File 53.
Enrolled Act Number 43 from original Senate File Number 53, an act relating to partitions of real property. Bless
you. I'm about to sign the Senate Enrolled Act 43, being original Senate File 53. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for reconsideration is Senate Enrolled Act 44, being original Senate File 105.
Enrolled Act Number 44 from original Senate File Number 105, an act relating to school facilities projects.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 44, being original Senate File 105. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for reconsideration is Senate File 45, being original Senate File 44.
Enrolled Act Number 45 from original Senate File Number 44, an act relating to the military department.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 45, being original Senate File 44. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for reconsideration is Senate Enrolled Act 46, being original Senate File 46.
Enrolled Act Number 46 from original Senate File Number 46, an act relating to domestic relations.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 46, being original Senate File 46. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate File 47, being original Senate File 74.
Enrolled Act Number 47 from original Senate File Number 74, an act relating to professions and occupations.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 47, being original Senate File 74. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for reconsideration is Senate Enrolled Act 48, being original Senate File 78.
Enrolled Act Number 48 from original Senate File Number 78, an act relating to the military department.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 48, being original Senate File 78. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 49, being original Senate File 144.
Enrolled Act Number 49 from original Senate File Number 144, an act relating to community college district boards.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 49, being original Senate File 144. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 50, being original Senate File 23.
Enrolled Act Number 50 from original Senate File Number 23, an act relating to economic development.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 50, being original Senate File 23. I have so signed. The next enrolled act for consideration is Senate Enrolled Act 51, being original Senate File 73.
Enrolled Act Number 51 from original Senate File Number 73, an act relating to unemployment compensation.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 51, being original Senate File 73. I have so signed. We're at that order of business of committee announcements. Vice Chairman Kasparek.
Mr. Speaker, your Joint Minerals Committee number 9 will meet on Monday, February 25th at 9 a.m. in room H18 to discuss interim topics.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Joint Conference Committee on House Bill 187 will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in Senate Room S18.
Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Oh, certainly.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for all your heavy lifting today and this week, and I hope on your desk you've received a small token from a very philanthropic and generous man named Raymond Plank. It is a book called A Small Difference, and I thought it was just so appropriate that we were receiving this gift when we have worked almost a 40-day session, trying to make that small difference in Wyoming. And this gentleman turned 90 last year, and he, for many of us in the northeastern part of Wyoming, are very familiar with him and his tremendous gift, not only to our region, but to the state of Wyoming. He landed here in 1969, and he's been giving ever since. And I just would read this quick quote on page 333 of his book that says, "To the reader, I pass along final words of my mother. Keep your courage and your faith high. And of my father, try to make a very small difference on behalf of others." And so with that, please enjoy, when you're recovering during the interim, his book on A Small Difference. Thank you, and have a great weekend.
Any other committee announcements? Representative Esquivel, privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to remind everybody that my wife's band's playing tonight. And it's actually the Anderson's Other Corner. They start about 8:30, and the address is 1303 East Pershing Boulevard. So if you just go up Warren, turn right on Pershing, and then you got the cemetery on both sides. There's a light there at the bottom of the hill. You go five more blocks, and it's on your right there. Anderson's Other Corner.
Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee 99 will be meeting immediately upon adjournment of business here down at Buffalo Wild Wings. So hope everybody can make it.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 o'clock a.m. on Monday, February 25, 2013.
Good work, everybody, this week. People of the state of Wyoming can be proud. Be safe over the weekend. You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House is adjourned until Monday, February 25th, 2013 at 10 a.m.